shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood, question mark? I don't know who made this movie. Somebody makes bad movies. Yeah, we make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar, joined as always by Cody Wolf.
I, for the life of me, could not think of one line from this movie.
Not even
a funny one, just not one line I can think of from this movie.
You are not wrong, Jack Estabrook.
I got nothing.
Just, you know, Christy Small.
If I just start a line and then stop and never finish it, that would probably be.
Or just jump ahead 10 years.
Yeah.
Or jump backwards 15.
We need to do time jumps for this. Yeah, and Nick Newhart.
This feels like a movie they would have made on Entourage, and I didn't realize till afterwards why that was so appropriate.
Yes. I should say, normally I'm the one subjecting everyone else to torture. Nick suggested this movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I'm glad he did. And this movie's super crazy and very suitable.
It needed
for this
to be on the podcast.
Yeah.
It did.
It's tailor-made.
It has. Gaudi opens up with so many logos. I've never seen this many production company logos come up like this. And it was a cast of thousands of logos.
How many times was this script shopped around, and who sued to get their name stuck to the script? I don't know.
They were paid $10 to get and then I got real concerned when I said it was in association with MoviePass Ventures, which was very concerning.
Yeah.
I was a MoviePass member, loved MoviePass for quite a while, and then everything fell apart, and I'm not at all surprised that this is a movie that would get made by them.
There is, I won't get into it here, but there's a whole thing about this movie and a controversy where MoviePass may have been inflating the already meager box office returns of this movie by essentially buying tickets, their own tickets, and if you Google it, it's kind of interesting.
So it sounds almost like some sort of conspiracy racketeering.
Could be. This movie, I audibly gasped twice in this movie. Once off camera, we talked about it will come up. But the other one is right off the top when John Travolta just turns and straight up starts talking to the camera. I mean, the first thing, I've never been taken out of a movie that quickly before.
And this is first scene.
First scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just turns and starts talking to the camera. And I started thinking, Rankin Bass Christmas specials do this better, where a character starts talking to the camera. I mean, it was that jarring to me.
But it gets weird because he's talking after he's dead.
Yeah.
This is him telling his whole life story post-mortem.
But very aggressively.
Yeah.
And you don't know when he's narrating and when he isn't, because the narration just seems to pop in and out. It's not consistent.
Yes. Everything pops in and out.
Yeah.
Well, because in addition to this whole framing, there's two timelines going on at the same
time. Well, there's old man John Gotti in jail talking to his son. There's young man John Gotti when he first gets in or whatever. Yeah,
there's John Gotti talking to his son, and then there's the timeline of the rise of John Gotti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the outer framing of
John
Gotti from beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's with at John least Zabby. Three timelines, one of them possibly in a purgatory state. Yeah.
At best, if he's lucky.
There's sort of a montage that starts it off with that I kept being are they giving us some background on John Gotti? Because I'm a little familiar with John Gotti's story before I watched this, and I was maybe they're giving us a little primer. But then I'm no, not really. This montage means nothing and has provided me with no information.
Yeah, and there's also there's a lot of use of music to set the time period.
Except it's not.
Except then they'll jump.
Pitbull throughout this movie.
1980. Pitbull blaring from the.
Yeah.
I think he composed the shaft theme. Composed the movie.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It starts off with...
And they used Fog Hat in that one scene.
Oh, that's true. They did.
There was a couple.
No, not Fog Hat. It was...
I know what you mean, though.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Thank you.
Yeah.
There was a couple of pops, current pop songs, though, that I was... It took, some of them, it took me a second to figure out what song it was. And I was like, wait, no, this is not helping set the time period. Never mind.
It felt
It was kind of a Tarantino kind of thing, where
Yeah, but
we're in the Old West, but we're playing,
Exactly, but like at times, but then at other, it's like there was like three people supervising the music, and one was going for period music, the other was doing a Tarantino thing, and the third person actually was deaf and was just like pulling random tracks. it makes no sense. But the movie, I thought, actually started off with a fascinating idea of a mafia guy being asked to track down a kidnapper while other gangs are also looking for this kidnapper, and the police may be looking for this kidnapper. And it just kind of made me think, I'm like, ooh, that's a movie. Like, because young John Gotti is sort of tasked with that. I'm like, that's an interesting movie.
Except it lasted for about 5 seconds.
One scene. One scene.
And I think, like, after I watched this movie, I watched, like, part of a documentary on John Gotti just to kind of... Because I was kind of fascinated by John Gotti, not... this film's version of John Gotti, but like I don't really know much about him.
Right.
And I guess this was like his first hit. Like this is his first, like how he got really into being like a made man or whatever. But they don't really ever set that up in the movie. Like this is his, it's just kind of like, oh, here's John Gotti, he's killing a guy.
I think that would have been really interesting to be like a made mafia guy who's trying to act as a detective. You know, like, but then he literally next scene, he's like, okay, he walks into a bar and kills a guy. And
right.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
And they never actually say that that's the kidnapper.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's no.
It's just a random hit.
They say his name at one point. Very confusing. And then later on, he's killing other people that are related to that case somehow. No explanation.
Right. And they never tie in even the premise that young John Gotti was put in on of like, hey, other mafia, you know, other mafia families are also looking for this guy. You got to be real careful. That becomes irrelevant in the one follow up scene.
There are so many things that are mentioned in this movie that then become irrelevant by the next scene.
Yeah.
They'll tell you things that don't matter, and then they'll just assume. You know things that never get explained.
This movie cannot figure out the difference between show and tell. They will literally say someone's name and then put up a card, put up an ID of who they are.
Yeah.
But you sometimes barely never see that person again.
Yeah.
Or then sometimes you will see that person constantly, but there are people who didn't get cards who are in the whole movie who I'm like, who are
important to the story. Yeah. But then it jumps around so much, so now you have all that, and on top of that you're bending the fourth dimension where we're all over the place.
Yeah.
And you'd think that would make sense, but it doesn't. It's just at random. And then there was this one time that this happened. And then there was this one time that happened. Yeah, did that affect this? No, but we thought it was important to show it.
Yeah.
I think my favorite piece of the narration was in early on when he gets out of jail and the narrator says, and when I got home, I had to ask my son where the house was. And then in the movie, he pulls up to his son. Hey, where's the house?
Literally,
were the filmmakers? Repetition.
Was this like a re-edit where like the producers saw the film and they were like, the audience is totally going to get confused.
This had to have been like a 4-hour movie cut down to like an hour and a half.
I think so.
So much was missing.
Literally, I was trying to explain it to a coworker this week how it's like it'll be John Gotti and his family having dinner and then cut and it's like. He's in court, and it's like, and then I beat that rap, and it's like, what rap?
Or later on, when the son gets into that bar fight, and somebody gets killed, and they're flipping out, this is gonna have consequences.
It doesn't.
No, there are never mentioned again.
Never mentioned again. Right. There are no consequences. Because
they set these things up, and then immediately cut 5 years in the future, or 15 years back in the past.
Things that have nothing to do with what they were talking about.
So these things can't have any consequences.
It's as an audience member, you are like, there is a story. John Gotti was a person who existed. Why is this movie not telling us the story of John Gotti? It's like we're looking through the window at John Gotti when we're out mowing the lawn and we just kind of look in and he's in the kitchen and then we keep mowing the lawn, right? Yeah. Like that's all we're getting, these little glimpses of John Gotti.
Because I was thinking, like last night I watched Bohemian Rhapsody for the first time, which I thought was really good. But it's kind of the same thing where it's like telling a story of this person's life over all these years. And that movie did it well.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was a disaster in how they tried to do it because it just cut ahead and... There was no flow to or rhyme or reason to why they're cutting to where they're cutting.
None of the any kind of emotional moment is never earned because you only spend a few seconds with every plot point and you never get invested in anything.
Yeah. Because like a big plot point, not plot point, but a big part of John Guy's life is that he was constantly being, you know, getting out of these indictments and stuff. He's, you know, the Teflon Don. But the way they do that is just literally in the middle of any narrative. They just cut to him in a courtroom. They're like, you're not guilty. He's like, I got out of that one.
Yeah, well, we were never told that he was indicted again.
Right, there's no...
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, well, this was going on. Well,
there's no, like, oh, I was indicted for this. It was just like, he's not guilty. It's like,
what's great, because you're, in addition to being the worst paced and worst edited film I've probably ever seen, the film has a third weakness of... It's based on a book written by John Gotti Jr. May or may not surprise anybody. And the movie is aggressively unwilling to take responsibility for a lot of things. So they're like literally skirting things where you're like, wait, so he beat a rep. What was he charged with? Almost are like, don't look at that.
He was found not guilty in the court of law.
Therefore, it doesn't matter what he was charged with. Yeah.
Therefore, he's innocent.
He was acquitted.
Yeah. Yeah, after the movie, I realized I can't recall any point where they actually explain how the organization makes their money. Outside of, well, we had to kill these other mobsters because they were going to kill us. It never deals with the crimes they actually commit.
Yeah, they make sure they focus on that. Well, you know, when they did kill people, when they do kill people, it was other bad people and it was to protect us. And,
I guess just realizing, based on a book by his son, this could have been more, I don't know how the book was or whatever, but more of that relationship. Because they kind of tried to go into that relationship a bit, but it's like, I don't care about John Gotti Jr. at all. In this movie. So I got annoyed when he would come in the movie, and then the
actor playing him was so awful.
John Travolta's acting actually worked for me.
Yes,
that is the positive thing I will say. Yeah. But everyone else was just a caricature.
Yeah,
like even the emotional scenes of after his son's death, whenever Kelly Preston spoke, I just couldn't take anything seriously.
Stacey Keach was pretty cool.
I like the guy who played Angelo Ruggiero there. Mm-hmm. The three of them, I thought.
There was strong casting on those three. Yeah. And I thought, you know, I mean, in terms of like the cinematography looked good. The makeup effects were fantastic. The aging, when you age someone in makeup in like 60 years, it's easy. 40 years, it's harder. But like 10 years, it's pretty tough. And with John Travolta, that actually looked pretty good. So I'll give the movie that.
They just kind of slipped it in there, like, oh, it's because my cancer.
But they even danced around that. Like three characters in this movie died of cancer, and it's literally just a throwaway point.
Yeah.
Then he died. The cancer got him. Then he died. The cancer got him. Ah, I got this cancer in me, and it's okay.
Well, and I think a big
which is sad and apparently true, but.
And I know we're not really going through the movie because it's kind of hard to go through this movie.
It is very hard to.
Our podcast is going to be as
there's a little I do want to go through, this is a hard movie to get through.
I just want to say that because I feel like this movie's, there's nothing to grab onto in it. It should be about the relationship between him and his son or the relationship between him and Angelo or, you know, him and Stacey Keach because they had this great relationship. But it's like all that is, because it's so condensed, it's like, oh, me and Angelo are great friends. And then it's like, now I have to kick him out of the, and it's like, now he's gone in the movie. Now he's dead. They should have built more on those relationships to make it more of a more of an interesting film.
I almost would have made the movie based on the trials. Literally, just have the whole movie be cutting back and forth from John Gotti sitting in a trial to flashbacks to what got him there. And then he beats the rap. And then you do it in like, he said he beat the rap, what, like five times? So that's five acts to your film. And then you use the court documents as sort of the basis of your script. That could have been a more interesting
film. Not a bad idea. I mean, because, well, there's a couple of better movies within this movie that they don't do. That's not a bad one. I mean, part of this movie's fundamental problem is if you said to anybody, hey, are you excited to see a movie about John Gotti Jr.? People would be like, no, I want to see a movie about John Gotti. But this movie is weirdly obsessed with John Gotti Jr.
Yeah. It is, but there's nothing there. It's just like him watching these things happen to his father.
Because it's also a whitewashed version of John Gotti Jr.
But then the last 10 or 15 minutes, whatever, is after John Gotti is dead, it's like, what are we still doing in this movie? And it's like, oh, now John Gotti Jr. is getting out of it, and he's getting, you know, whatever, his trials and stuff. It's like, oh, I don't care about that, because that's not, you know, it's about John Gotti.
I think there's also what could be a fascinating movie to be made about John Gotti and Sammy the Bull Gravano. Mm-hmm. One of the funniest things that this movie shows almost no interest in is when Sammy the Bull Gravano flipped. Right. And testified against Gotti. This is like one of the biggest mafia events, of the modern era. And it's like one scene, setup. Mm-hmm. They don't even explain why he did.
No.
Because the reason he did would be embarrassing to the Gotti family, hence probably not included in this movie.
Okay, now I'm curious. Yeah, what is the reason?
The feds played a wiretap for Sammy the Bull Gravano where John Gotti was just ridiculing him and like, you know, basically like, yeah,
could never be boss.
Yeah, could never be a boss. And was like, and Sammy Paul's like, okay, I'm down for flipping.
Well, and that could have been like another peg on the movie. It could have been that relationship because it's like,
and then the betrayal.
Sammy the Bull comes in and it's like, I don't trust that guy. I don't know him. Cut to, I don't know, 10 years later, it's like, oh, now we're best friends. He's at my son's wedding, this, that. Cut to another 10 years later, whatever, and he's flipping on me. And it's like, I don't care about it, though. I don't care. Like,
speaking of the relationship, like, the relationships in the movie are more interesting than the movie actually portrays them. The real life
relationships.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one thing I do like that this movie does that a lot of other mafia movies don't is it shows that the politics are a lot more complicated than, that family, they're again. There's a lot of moving pieces, and this, like with everything else, this movie does a bad job of explaining it, but it does make it clear, like, oh, you've got to get a lot of pieces in place before you want to try and do anything.
Right. There's something in this movie where they could have even advanced, because it's heavily influenced by the Scorsese mob movies, you know, Goodfellas and Casino.
Where they're trying to make colorful characters that speak in witty dialogue. And
Nick's right, it kind of actually could have almost been like the Scorsese version that really takes you inside a little of like how the mob actually works and these like weird relationships between mafia families and this odd set of rules that they... Like, that Scorsese, actually, I think Casino maybe does a slightly better job of explaining it than Goodfellas does, but that still, like, ample ground there to really do something.
And I think it would have been interesting if the movie were just a lead-up to him taking over, like, his early life getting into the mob, because, I mean, the stuff I was watching was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, him leading up to him, you know, killing the I can't remember what the character's name is now.
The
boss at the time. Because after he becomes boss, it's just the rest of the movie kind of is nothing's happening. It's just like
the rise is much more interesting.
Yeah, because then he's the boss. He's just doing whatever. There's really not much happening there. To you know,
it gets
it's more about
messy.
His downfall, I guess. But it's not really.
It's interesting. It's kind of interesting.
Again, even his downfall is like everything's fine. Then all of a sudden, like he's in court and it's like.
Right,
playing these tapes of him admitting to stuff, and he's like, "Oh no!" And then it's like, there's no actual like decline.
That trial when he finally does get found guilty, the card at the beginning of the trial says "Gotti murder trial," and then at the end they say, "Oh, they got me on racketeering" or something like that. So even when they try to explain what happened, it still doesn't work. No. And then after that, just that could have been the end of the movie. I mean, there's nothing really to it after that, except for the fact that it's about John Gotti Jr.
Yeah, and now that I know that, it makes more sense.
Yeah.
I want to point out...
very confused.
It's going to be hard to really go through the movie, but I'll try to go through my notes a little bit. Because one of the key scenes in that the movie has no narrative thread. It's a wreck.
No.
It's just a broken piece of glass.
Yeah.
But there's this idea of John Gotti Jr. is deciding whether to take a plea deal, and he's meeting with his dad... in this kind of theory of, is he going to take a plea deal? And I was really confused because I kind of knew John Gotti Jr.'s story, but I was very flaky on it until I saw this movie. And then after this movie, I was like, I got to read into this. He keeps talking about, he's like, well, John Gotti Jr. is like, I might take this plea deal just for closure, And even John Gotti's like, did you do this or not? And John Gotti Jr. is like, no, I just need the closure. I need to be able to move on with my life. In real life, he took the plea deal faced with overwhelming evidence. I mean, he wasn't doing this for closure. Right. The evidence was literally overwhelming against him that he had been.
I can't beat the rap even though I'm innocent, so I got to be there for my family kind of thing is what the movie is strongly implying.
The movie portrays this weird picture of John Gotti Jr. as a guy who... is in the mob, but is like essentially like a mobster with a golden heart or something. I don't know. Like
I was just in the wrong place. Wrong time.
Until the scene where he actually becomes a made man, I wasn't sure if he was joining his father or not. Because there's the one scene where John Gotti's like, "Oh, you want to be in my life? No, you don't. Let's go make a sandwich," or whatever it was. A quick little, no, you don't want to follow me. And then nothing else is said, but suddenly he's. Well, I don't think suddenly. I think there might have been a scene
there
where he's
was some
like turning
up, but
over
not
money,
much.
But not enough of like him making the decision to join his father. And you know, actually being part of it. And, you know, it just feels like everything he did was, you know, an accident killing the kid in the bar, or he was sitting there while his father did other things. It doesn't actually ever show him doing anything until all of a sudden he's a made man.
Right. Would this surprise, for those who don't know his story, that John Gotti Jr. literally ran the Gambino crime family for years after his father went to jail.
Yeah, you get that at the end of the movie, but yeah. I didn't know that at the beginning of the movie, so I had no idea like what they were talking about. And like, if I had known he was like the head and he's talking about stepping away from it, that would add more to that.
And he said the movie just kind of says the... You know, the cops are accusing him of being the acting boss.
Yeah, they're accusing. They make it sound like he wants to step away from like a desk job with the mafia or something.
Yeah. Well,
like,
I think they basically say when Gotti goes to jail, that his son takes over for him.
Do they?
There's one confrontation where he says, "I'm here to make sure my father's orders get followed." And the other guys walk away.
I mean, maybe I'm making up, but I thought I remember, like, Travolta, you know, Gotti actually saying, like, my son took over for me, that kind of thing.
I thought the movie was trying to posit this weird image of that, like, maybe John Gotti Sr. was still running things from jail, mm-hmm. and John Gotti Jr. was this, in the version of this movie, is kind of this kid who's like, huh?
Yeah.
What's going on around here?
Because even when he's, like, the boss, he's still not... I mean, he's just, like, talking to people. He's not doing, like, the boss thing.
He's not... He's right. Just, like, they don't show him as the boss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, like, a big part of the film, the John Gotti, the characterization of John Gotti is, let him look. I'm tired of doing this, like, backroom deal stuff. I'm a man of my word, and I'm out front. I am who I am, and I'm not ashamed of it. So you shouldn't be ashamed either. But the movie in and of itself is kind of hiding behind... You know, like clever verbiage to make it seem like they're not as bad as they are. And that kind of goes against that idea of the John Gotti character, which I kind of liked that. I don't care. This isn't one of these. We're not going to hide. We're not going to do any backroom deals. We're just going to do this. Let them look. I don't care. We are who we are kind of thing. Don't be ashamed of it.
But that's also contradicted.
They got nothing on me, right?
We haven't even talked about Kelly Preston yet, who's playing John Gotti's wife in... Like a really wild, like Italian stereotypical performance.
It's a complete caricature.
It's a caricature.
And nothing, like I said, I can't take anything she says seriously.
It's cartoonish.
Yeah.
But then there's like stuff at the end, and this is again, where based on a book by John Gotti Jr., where she genuinely, somehow this movie is, if John Gotti Jr. is kind of like painted as like a guy who didn't really know what was going on, somehow they want us to believe that John Gotti's wife was totally unaware of how the mob worked and was totally unaware that her own son was running the Gambino crime family.
I don't think it fully did that. I don't think it, I don't think the movie actually decided if she knew or not. Because there's a couple lines when, you know, she says something very sarcastic. Like, Senior and Junior are sitting out on the patio. I forget exactly what they're talking about. Junior walks away and the wife comes up and she says something like, what, he's not in this life? And it's like sarcastic font. Like, she clearly, it seems like she obviously knows he's doing it.
No, to me it seemed like she had no idea, because there's the later scene where she does find out. She screams at
but see, I felt that scene to me felt like she already knew that he was part of it, and she was just mad that he was taking over.
No, I think she genuinely didn't know.
See, this is how bad the movie. This is how bad the movie is. That a major character. We actually have to debate whether or not she knew, and that's not the kind of thing you debate when you normally watch a movie.
And jumping way forward to the courtroom scene when she's flipping out in the courtroom, I'm like, I think this movie is trying to say to us that she genuinely believes her son is innocent, which is like, that's insane. That's nuts. That she
was like all over like the newspapers and stuff. Yeah. They show like newspaper clippings, you know, or covers of like John Gotti Jr. takes over the gang, you know, stuff like that.
Right. Like, which,
so a quick note about all those
I was gonna bring that.
All those newspaper covers. This movie can't decide if
the actors are
playing the characters or if they're showing real footage. There was one of the covers where it was the actual picture of John Gotti Jr., but then the picture of the character playing the friend that flips on him.
Right.
Yeah. So it was the actor and the real person in the same newspaper cover.
I thought about that too.
Horribly inconsistent. It opens with a bunch of shots of the real John Gotti running out of court, and then it cuts to a magazine cover of John Travolta in the makeup doing the same thing kind of in a still photo. It's very inconsistent.
Yeah, it took me out of the movie too because it was just like, because it wasn't just like the beginning and the end. It was like throughout the movie that whenever something happened, they cut to the actual news footage of the actual John Gotti, and you know, which I thought was on one level interesting because I, you know, you see, but that, the other part or the other at the same time, it takes me out of it because it's like, well, that's not John Travolta, and he doesn't really kind of look like him either.
Right.
Like,
all the news reports also felt like really lazy exposition, and the only time anything ever got explained.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Like, and I would almost say they maybe should have done more of it, especially early in the movie, because it, oh, it no, really no. needed it. Mm-hmm. Did anyone also notice, too, that when characters in the movie are talking, this movie has a strong, like, anti-government bent, mm-hmm. but there's a weird anti-journalism bent through it. Did anybody notice that? There's a bunch of times.
There's a couple times where, a guy says something like...
They're like, oh, the newspaper. Right. You read that in a newspaper? And, like, there's... And I was kind of like, it just... Like, obviously, in the field where we have all worked in, I was a little, like, kind of sensitive to that. But I was like, why is that... I thought it was like kind of strange. I was like, okay, sort of seems
weird.
They're
saying they're the mafia and they're bad guys. Yeah. They're just looking out for the community, Alex.
Well, then I was on John Gotti Jr.'s Wikipedia page. No. And among other unbelievably boneheaded things he did when he was running the Gambino crime family, the FBI once, in a house he owned, found a typed list of the names of all the maid members of the Gambino crime family.
Oh, wow.
A list of all the guests who attended John Gotti Jr.'s wedding, along with the dollar amount of their wedding gifts, and a list of people in other mafia families. This is, by the way, when this is one of the reasons he was facing overwhelming evidence when he pled guilty. And he was became well-known in the New York media as Dumb Fella. And apparently that explains a little of why there is such an anti-media slant to this movie.
Always got to watch out for the juniors.
I'm just kind of like... There's so many also weird music choices we went over. One of them over a car explosion when they were doing like Pet Shop, that Pet Shop Boys song, like West End Boys.
Yeah, do you know
that
song? Yeah, I do.
It was a strange...
Right? Like, they were trying to set... This is what I was talking about earlier. And it's like they're trying to set the decade, but they picked... I don't know what they were trying to do.
It was like, it was almost like someone trying to do a Tarantino, like, non-traditional music choice, but one that just didn't work at all.
Well, they didn't have the Tarantino or Scorsese budget, so.
It's true.
What music rights can we clear?
That's true. And they really, like, stuck with it as well, you know? I mean, wow.
Though I did notice one straight Scorsese lift towards the end of the movie. Blanking on the name of the song now.
Well, Pitbull?
No. It was The Animals.
It was, and it's so, like, I'm just looking through my notes. Yes. Rising Sun. Yeah, I was like
I just started laughing. And but I mean, that's probably about the only Scorsese thing they could afford, so.
It's so hard to even, like, I'm looking at my notes and I'm like, I don't even know how to talk about the plot of this movie because it's everywhere and it's nowhere.
Well, I was just thinking, like, when you brought up the car explosion, I thought that was odd considering the scene when Junior gets made and they actually go through the oath. And I was trying to think, weren't those two scenes close together? But I have no idea in the timeline where those scenes were.
There really is no timeline.
Well, because they don't really age. John Gotti Jr., except his hairstyle slightly changes.
At the end,
it's a little gray.
It's like slick, except in court, it's spiky.
And
he wears glasses.
Jarring, because then they kept cutting to the actual John Gotti Jr. during that trial.
He looks much older.
He's stocky, and he's got like really gray hair, and he's older, and he's like, oh, that's supposed to be the same character? Because everyone else is kind of decently aged, but him.
Yeah.
But the reason why I was trying to figure out how close those scenes are together was because in the oath that John Gotti, or that they say while he's getting made, is they say, we don't mess around with bombs. And then there's a car explosion. Like, I think relatively close to that scene.
Yeah.
Well, I think the explosion was someone trying to kill John Gotti Sr. So it was another family.
But it was still isn't it all Cosa Nostra and all the same code?
Until the scene
before. They're more like guidelines. They're more like guidelines.
Yeah.
But that was in response to
Mafia suggestions.
Wasn't that in response to Angelo trying to kill Gary? No.
I think it was supposed to be a hit on Gotti.
I think they started suspecting him of killing Paul.
Yeah.
There was a solid 20-minute period where I was just like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know who the bulk of these characters are. I don't know like what means what to who. Yeah. Like
pretty much every time we started off in court, I said, "What? Yeah. What is happening?" Yeah. I didn't know what was happening.
Charge
every time
is he facing? It also, like, in addition to trying to, like, play down the actual, like, crimes that the Gottis were committing, it's also always pushing this narrative of, like, hey, these are just good family guys just doing what it takes, you know?
I guess that's why, too, it felt so bizarre, because they weren't really showing any of the mafia stuff they were doing.
Right.
Except for him, you know, ordering the hit on Paul and taking over.
Right.
And then there's a couple other little things, but it really wasn't like Gotti doing anything or ordering anything.
It's a lot of parties. This movie would have you believe that mafia
life
like,
hey,
is
I'm
like,
in charge.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the whole neighborhood
a lot of conversations
loves John...
in well-furnished rooms.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole neighborhood loves John Gotti because he puts on fireworks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so you treat people with a lot of respect. You know, that's like...
Help to have a woman with her groceries.
Yeah.
I kind of also liked when they... put in this idea at some point in the movie where John Gotti Jr. is like, I really don't want this mob life anymore. I want to move on. I want closure. I want to get out. And it's like, this is completely contrary to the real story. Also, would it blow anyone's mind here that John Gotti has acknowledged that he gave the FBI information? He's denied being a snitch, but said he did give the FBI information.
John Gotti or John Gotti?
John Gotti Jr. John Gotti Jr. and claimed...
Oh, John Gotti Jr.
John
okay.
Gotti Jr.,
that makes
yeah.
more sense.
And claimed no indictments resulted from the information he gave the FBI.
That's right up there with... We don't use bombs.
Except when we do.
We don't turn red.
He was also charged.
But we give information.
Yeah. Well, in 2004 and 2008, John Gotti Jr. was also charged with racketeering. Like, for a guy who this movie wants us to believe is like, oh, God, I got to get out of this life. I'm just a good family guy who somehow found myself as the head of the Gambino crime family. You know?
Just wanted to go pick up some milk at the store. They were robbing it at the time.
I know. I thought we were just a good neighborhood organization. I'm just learning that tons of people were killed and murdered. My mom doesn't know about any of this.
I thought it was just a fraternal organization.
The movie's so crazy.
In the scene, they actually show him getting arrested as opposed to John Gotti Sr. that you never see why he's in court. But that scene made me laugh too because he's like, ugh, here they come. All right, kids, I'm going to be going away for a while.
It was like the end of the Blues Brothers too. Like it's an army, it's just a whole just division of the army shows up.
And again, you don't know why they're coming after him at all.
You don't know why because at that point in the movie, I'm like, why are they putting
this helicopter? It's this mysterious charge that he's going to confess to or he's going to plead to but didn't do.
For closure. Because at this point, I couldn't really remember his story. I'm like, was he really low level? Because I'm like, sending a helicopter and a SWAT team for a low level guy seems a little except, oh, he was the head of the Gambino crime family. I guess that's why they, though the movie does not want you to believe that. A lot of my notes is also, kind of like we were talking about other movie ideas, I thought they had a really interesting framing device of John Gotti, like they could have done, told it kind of through his two sons. He had a son die, and he had a son essentially plead guilty.
And he had three sons. There was a third one.
And a third son who they seemed to have no interest in.
We only find out about when John Gotti Sr. dies.
Yeah.
The third son was there.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
Well, and there were two daughters that never... They don't grow up. They, you know, once the son dies, they're like gone from the movie.
Yeah. They're not seen again. Yeah. It would have been...
Also, just remind me, the pacing of this movie and the editing and everything, it really was annoying when the son dies, because it's like the kid dies, you know, he gets hit by a car playing the road or whatever, and you know they're really devastated by it, and he's like really sad, and you know, his wife is just wrecked, and he's like, oh, we'll get through this, we're gonna get through this together. Then like the next scene is her crying in bed, and he comes and he's like, you gotta stop crying in bed, this is, we gotta get past this, it's ridiculous.
I was very confused when the son died, because I got up to go get a drink real quick, I come back, and for like 5 minutes I thought John Gotti ran over his son, not the neighbor, and I'm like, What? Why'd they kill him? Oh, it was the okay.
Right.
It's not done well.
And that's another interesting thing that they kind of gloss over too is, apparently that seems like they killed the guy who killed his son, who was a total accident.
Yeah.
And they kind of glossed over that. It would have been interesting to see that. Him being so grieving that he's like...
I just now realized they never actually say that they did kill the guy.
No, they let the news report. They show a news report.
They show a news report, yeah. There's like a meaningful look between John Gotti and two of his guys.
At no point are they admitting to any kind of criminal deed outside of...
Because that would have been...
It felt like they wanted to tell a cool anecdote, but be also a plausible deniability.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, let me tell you this crazy story. By the way, I mean, we don't really know that they...
I mean, John was in Florida when it happened.
Yeah.
When the guy died.
It would have been interesting because, you know, he's like this guy, we only kill the people who are trying to harm us and stuff, and then but because he's so devastated that he makes this, you know, I just that would have been more interesting than them just showing like a news footage like, yeah, this guy disappeared, and then some guys showed up, and
the other guys just take it on themselves to kill the guy.
But that would have been interesting too.
It's just
maybe
something
they
more
go against Gotti's wishes or something. I don't know.
Then pay no consequences because there's no consequences for it.
Course not.
And then my second audible gasp at this movie is this movie ends with text on a screen that basically says, I should have written it down, but it's basically like, the real, you know, criminals here are the cooperating witnesses who took plea deals, you know.
More than 100.
The government handlers released these killers on the streets.
Yeah. They were all released.
Yeah, these released. But it's also, as I'm reading this, I'm like, 100 cold-blooded killers. Who were they killing people for? The Gambino crime family, who these two characters were running. Like
they got their orders from the lead characters.
Yeah, it's the weirdest editorial. Like it's an insane message to put in a movie to just be like, oh, the, you know, any witness who cooperated with the prosecution is the real villain. Like what?
And also which I guess, you know, it's actual footage, at least it seems like actual footage of Gotti's funeral and all that. But every person that they include in the story is, he was a great guy. The neighborhood was safe with him, you know? He was just doing his job.
And every actual footage and every real person he used, though, was also a character. Like, they were very selective in and who they put.
But and that's something that, I mean, because I think that there was some of that sentiment, too, in real life. Like, he was well-liked by the community or whatever, but they never really go into that in the movie either. It's just,
why did the community rally in his favor?
Yeah. The only thing that they even slightly do to earn that sentiment is the fireworks scene, but that's not enough. But there,
he reopens a gym in a very...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Another movie right there.
But there could have
been... The two sides of John Gotti.
Yeah, I mean, there really could have been more to earn...
Yeah,
that
they just want to focus on the mobster stuff, but like Jack said, it would have been if they had those two sides, like him being, you know, a good guy in the community, then hit this dark side of what he's actually like.
See, they want to focus on the mobster stuff, but not actually admit to any mobster stuff. It's very they can't decide. Well, they know what they want, but there's just no way to achieve it without. Getting this mess.
A book by John, like, this should not have been the premise. Like, it needed to be a genuine look at, like, what was really going on, warts and all.
Or just make a movie based on John Gotti, you know, a different character, just based on loosely those, you know.
Change the names. Yes.
Change the
one
names.
One or the other, because this was a mess of...
Essentially do what Scorsese did for Casino, where it's based on a real story, but they changed all the names so they weren't going to get sued. And we're gonna,
Honestly, at the end of this, more than anything, I just kind of wanted to watch Casino.
Yeah, I did too.
It's a good movie.
My husband is a true crime buff and knows a lot more about the Gotti family than I do. And at one point, for this being supposedly based on a book by a guy that was there, you know, you'd think that they would have a little bit more factually correct than normal. But there was one scene where he's having a conversation with Neil about whether or not he's going to kill the guy that flipped, and then it shows him being shot in an alley.
Right.
And my husband turned to me, he goes, Neil died 3 years before that guy, I think it was three, like a couple of years before that guy was shot, and that guy was shot by two people in a house, not an alley. Like, you know, things like that, that the timeline, not again, not that this movie has a timeline, but the timeline of the actual things that happened. But
they get
wrong.
Facts wrong, yeah.
Yeah.
Even that stuff, like, I don't mind as much if, as
for
long
dramatic
as it's,
effect,
as long as it's like interesting. Like the movies, like again, Bohemian Rhapsody was very,
very
factually
wrong.
Yeah. Inaccurate, but it was an entertaining story. Like
yeah.
they made changes for the story. This movie, it was just like
that's
they
true.
Made changes, but it just. Like it didn't matter if you got
nonsense.
Shot in
right.
Like,
house.
Right,
they changed this the stupidest things.
Right.
But you just think, you know, in my head, if this is really going to be like, if they're going to show that kind of stuff for once in the movie, you'd
right.
think
right.
they'd get it right. If
especially if they're
on...
just little vignettes where
yeah.
it's like this has no connection to any other part of the movie. That each scene or section is like its own vignette.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
so,
so much
show...
of it is like just trying to be like checking boxes.
Right.
Of, yep. Like it's sort of like almost like a Wikipedia, or like a re-edited Wikipedia page where they're just
right,
trying
right.
to check like.
Yeah. In some
yeah.
ways it reminded me a little bit, you know, the way it just hits these notes without any connection reminded me of the Steve Jobs movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which one?
With Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was well done, but watching that movie, you know, each, there's basically, I think it was three or four, like, essentially vignettes of him getting ready to do one of the big Apple announcements, and it's everything that happens, you know, before the announcement. Not that it's true, but it felt like that, of like one big thing, the next big thing, the next big thing, the next big thing, but there was no thread, no connection,
right.
You know, the storylines connected between all the vignettes in the Jobs movie, but this was just this happened and then that's done and then that happened and then that's done and then
yeah.
that happened, and it just, you know, it could be done better.
Yeah,
you're going to do something like that.
Right. Yes.
Because they were incomplete vignettes, too. It was
yeah.
like we jumped in the middle of it and he's in court, or we jumped in at the end of it and we don't know what happened because he's just some narration saying, like, yeah, some guy died. And
yeah.
What if, here's even another framing device. What if the framing device were, if they wanted to do two timelines, the timeline where John, or the trial where John Gotti actually gets convicted because, you know, Sammy the Bull Gravano flips on him. And going back to, like, those formation days and when
yeah.
he's coming up and the role that Sammy the Bull played in that
right,
like,
yeah, yeah.
and it all kind of comes together,
the
like,
trial.
You know, see them as great friends and him then flipping on him. And, like, there's so much potential here that it's all just
yeah.
wasted.
It was really bad. I this had to have been some other movie. Like, there had to have been a longer cut or...
This it's been floating around for decades. A bunch of other directors have been attached, like over the years. Other actors have been attached over the years. Al Pacino was attached at one point, and it just kind of, I don't know. I mean, I think there's some weird rights issues. I think they were all afraid they were going to get sued, you know, by John Gotti, because there's a question of, is John Gotti Jr. a true public figure? Can you,
mm-hmm.
like, some of the fringe characters, they would have, but they still could have done this in the Casino way, where you just change the
right.
names.
I just refuse to believe that this was the script.
Yeah. Well,
I refuse to believe that this is the movie. They have got to have cut at least an hour out of this sucker.
With the director, I mean, Kevin Connolly, I mean, that was, I got such a laugh when the movie ended. Because throughout the movie, I'm thinking, like, it kind of felt like something like, this would have been a movie they were making in a season of Entourage. And
mm-hmm.
it ends. Oh, this was directed by one of the stars of Entourage.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, that makes sense. Yeah.
Would it surprise anyone if I said one of the actors in this movie is a co-screenwriter?
No.
Would anyone
want
to guess? It is not Travolta.
Oh, I thought it was Travolta.
I'll say it's not Travolta. It's not Kelly Preston. It's not Stacy Keach.
It's John Gotti Jr.?
Not John Gotti Jr.
I'm
going to
say the guy who played Angelo.
Okay.
It just, for some reason, I don't know.
Okay. Anybody have another, anyone else have another guess?
Jeez, I don't know.
The guy that played the neighbor.
The guy, yeah.
Okay.
Just random, trying to come up with
I will
something.
Say, it's an actor who's in, consistently shows up through the movie, to the point
the
is, one of my notes in the movie where I was like, this guy's in a lot of the movie and I don't really understand why, but he kept coming in, and then at the end I'm like,
Adam
oh, he was a co-screenwriter.
Adam Maria, the name's beyond...
The guy who played Sammy the Bull. I don't know.
Leo Rossi, the guy who plays Bobby, the guy who ends up getting
yeah.
shot outside his house while his kid is watching.
Okay.
He was a co-screenwriter on the movie. And I was like, okay, maybe that explains why his character is in so many scenes somewhat unnecessarily. Also, a different actor in this movie, and again, not Travolta, Preston, Stacy Keach, is good friends with John Gotti Jr., any guesses on who that is, to the point where he said he actually had to not talk with him while he was making this movie because he didn't want it to influence his performance.
In that case, I would say the guy that played John Gotti Jr.
Not him.
Really? Because for a role that big, I'm surprised I have never seen that guy before.
Yeah. Anyone want to take a guess?
Again,
no,
Travolta.
The guy who played Sammy the Bull Gravano is personal friends with John Gotti Jr., which I found weird in that he's, which, again, it's like, giving the role that, like, that part had
So, John, funny story. I got a job offer this weekend.
I'm going to be playing a guy, I think he knew your dad.
Sammy?
Yeah. All right, so let's kind of do it. Is it so bad it's good?
This is a weird podcast because I feel bad we didn't go through the movie, but
you can't.
Yeah,
it's
you really have to just watch this.
Just look up the John Gotti Wikipedia page. Right? Yeah. That'll give you.
But just like jump around randomly.
Just read a section, jump up, read a section, skip five sections, read a section. Back.
In Jack and Cody, I would throw in, this is like the counselor level confusion, like trying to understand what is going on. The counselor, I don't know if you guys have seen, it's this Ridley Scott movie that I dare anyone to watch without looking at the Wikipedia page as you're watching it, because it's so like,
get lost.
What is going on?
This one's a bit more forgivable for being confusing because it's based on real.
But is it it's based on real events?
Yeah, because it assumes, it's making some assumptions that you know some stuff.
Mm-hmm. At least with this, you can look it up and find out what it is.
Yeah. So it's like they can't do everything because it is a guy's life over the span of, you know, 40 or 30 years, whatever it is.
Arguably two guys' lives because it's so fascinating.
It's going to be, unless they wrote it well, which they could have absolutely done, it's going to be a little confusing. But I don't know if I'd say it's so bad it's good. I think it's worth a watch if you're into bad movies because it is so insane. It's one of the worst made films I think we've done for this podcast, as far as the editing goes, the writing. I would say it's worth a watch, but I don't think I would say it's so bad it's good.
Okay, Jack.
One of my bad movie pet peeves, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm sure, is good concept gone bad. John Gotti is a story that I think deserves a better movie than this.
Yeah.
That plain and simple. This movie is just so. It was just kind of like, and then this happened, and then this happened. But why did that happen? Oh, it doesn't matter. We're on to the next thing. And wait, what time? Why did they tell it this way? There's no reason why they told the movie this way. It's the story of John Gotti. I mean, that's it. If you wanted to avoid getting sued or whatever, you change the name, right? I don't know.
Let the record show, Jack is pro John Gotti.
Yeah,
I know. He deserves.
I'm pro a John Gotti movie.
John Gotti deserves better.
He deserves a better
Jack
movie
Estabrook,
than this.
2019.
Yeah. They can put that on the poster. Yeah. Put that on the poster. Yeah. John Gotti deserves better. That is my review of Ted Bundy of Gotti. My review of Gotti. John Gotti deserves better. Yeah.
Christine?
I would not say it's so bad it's good, but I would say if you are interested in filmmaking at all, watch this as an example of what not to do.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it was kind of entertaining for the insanity, but it's a good lesson of how to do it wrong.
Yeah.
Nick?
I've definitely watched movies for this podcast and come away being more disappointed in how
angry
I spent my time.
Yeah.
It was not as bad as I was expecting.
Really?
Wow.
No, okay. I from what I had been hearing, I was expecting a lot worse. Oh, at the end, I was just kind of like...
I was shocked by that.
The editing was awful. Mm-hmm. The story was incomprehensible. But, you know, Travolta was... He did a good job as John Gotti.
He did.
You're not wrong with it. Travolta's charm makes him weirdly watchable when he's on camera.
The performance is good.
And,
you know, I'm always happy to see Stacy Keach and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's one of those actors.
I even said his name out loud. I was like, Stacy Keach, when I saw him.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was in this.
Neither
I saw
did
him
I.
Trouble. And, you know, I would have loved a movie about Stacy Keach's character more, but.
Yeah.
But it was just.
Yeah. There's a weird.
It's definitely not good, but it's not so bad it's good either. It's just meh.
It's just. Well, there's a weird quality to it, too, of like. Travolta is so big, and Stacy Keach, it's when he's on, it feels almost like a real movie. But other than the Stacy Keach like scenes, it almost feels like you're watching like a big star working in community theater or something.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because you're Travolta is just so big in this movie, and everyone else, partly due to the script, partly due to the direction, and the editing is so inconsequential that you're just like, okay. Like,
I had a lot of same thoughts watching the next movie we're doing, which we'll get into there.
But we'll get into that, yeah.
And also, tease that one, before I'd watched the next movie, this was the worst edited movie ever.
Yeah, we were back to back.
He's not badly, wrong.
Yeah, poorly, badly edited films. Yeah.
The poorly He's edited duology.
Yeah. I didn't think this was so bad. It's good. But for people who are big fans of, like, Goodfellas, Casino, like, those kind of movies, might get a kick out of how badly this is done, like Christy said. Or I'd be curious, like, for your husband, like, people who actually are really into the truth of this, who might laugh hysterically at this, like, alternate reality retelling of, like, John Gotti Jr.'s story.
Well, just
as
like
this
Cody,
heroic figure.
My husband was like, okay, now I want to refresh the real story. He wanted to go and watch something else that was a little more, you know.
Yeah, John Gotti Jr. wasn't an American hero. I get if you're into those things, but like, yeah, this was a chore for me. Like, I really, and again, there was a 20-minute stretch where I was not doing anything else. I didn't have my phone open, didn't have my email open. I was watching a movie.
And you didn't know what was going on.
And I did not know what was going on.
Yeah.
Who people were, or like, and that's a long stretch for 20 minutes for me to just be like, I need a life preserver. Like, throw me something.
I can think of at least three or four whole conversations in the movie where I'm just going, what was the point of that? What did any of that mean?
Yeah.
Forget conversations. Whole scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so one thing I forgot to say earlier that kind of killed me was as we're sitting there watching this, when it gets to the wedding scene, I said to my husband, like, they spend so much time just dropping everything and, you know, quick scene with nothing. And then they take forever on that song at the wedding.
Yeah.
Everyone's dancing.
When I was watching that kind of
family. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But the wedding scene was like the longest scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Didn't you feel like, because that location was also by far the most impressive set
they
location
the
they had.
Yeah.
And I feel like they were like, we're getting this in.
Can we set half the movie in this?
Yeah.
It's like the beginning of The Godfather, but in the middle of the movie.
this was a rough one. we can actually preview our next movie because we have it already ready to go. It is the 2001 movie Driven, or Drive-N, depending on how you want to pronounce it. The
Driven.
I was about to say who it was a star vehicle for, but then I realized as I was entering that it's not really clear who it's. Sylvester Stallone is in the movie.
Yeah. I've always known it as a Sylvester Stallone movie just based on seeing the trailers when I was younger when it came out, but then after watching, I'm like, that's not a Sylvester Stallone movie.
It's really no one's movie, is what we'll. And I think it's available on Crackle right now, or I don't know if it is when you're listening
Amazon
to this,
Prime.
But as we're recording it. It's on Amazon Prime.
It's on Amazon Prime, but it's with ads.
Which I've never seen.
Neither have I. I noticed that.
Wow.
You can rent it or you can
Jack
watch
Ryan
it with ads.
Jack Ryan has ads.
It's like through some, it's like IMDb streaming thing, but it's through Amazon, so it has ads. It was weird, but I'd rather watch it because I won't get to it.
That shows you how good it is.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon Prime, but with ads.
Yeah. And they still trying to make their money back on it. It's pretty funny, though, and that will be, I think we're going to have a good, as my notes on that, as I was writing them, I was like, wow, this movie, I pitched this movie, and it was much crazier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
The first 10 minutes were delightful. That's all I'm going to say.
I was nervous about doing two racing movies so close together, but this is so much worse than
that. And we can compare and contrast because the other
one
is so fresh
car,
in our minds.
The other's indie, all right? They're totally different.
I thought it was going to be like a spiritual sequel to Days of Thunder, and the whole time I was watching I was like, oh, please get me back to the world of
Days
of Thunder.
Knights of Lightning.
All right, so we'll be back very soon with that. We'll see you next time.